Mr. Is this recording? Okay. All right. What we're going to focus on this month is the honors that are paid to a true Holy Father. So here's... Oh, that's... We're finished with that. Would you be able to put that in the, okay. The vestibule when you get the chance? Okay. So our title for tonight is the primacy of honors and insignia, and most of this is taken from the Catholic Encyclopedia, the 1911 edition, so fairly safe a resource. So we're going to talk about how we honor a Holy Father, and will we ever have one? $1 million question. There's arguments against it, that because of the great falling away, the great apostasy that St. Paul talks about, that this is it. However, theologically, I cannot accept that position of defeat, that there, you know, that we can't do anything about it, that nothing can be done. That this is the way it is. It's a controversial topic, and I don't think anybody can claim to know the answer for sure, whether there will be or not be. But what is unmistakable, and this is a solemn proclamation of the Council of the Vatican Council I, that till the end of time, the office of the papacy will exist. The chair will be there, even though there isn't always somebody sitting on it. And if we denied that, then we would be heretics, because that is a solemn definition. The office is always there. The Diocese of Rome is always there, will be there until the end of time. So we definitely don't want to fall into heresy here. And say somehow the papacy has ceased. It hasn't. It can't. It will always be there till the end of time. The rock will be there. The chair will be there, but not always a live body on it. And this is our suffering. I'm sure you feel it as I do. You know, the not knowing or not having the Father in Rome to turn to. I mean, this is the normal condition of the Church, to turn to the visible head. The invisible head is always there, Jesus Christ, but the visible head is not always there. Okay, there's not a designated interpreter. That's true. I mean, only the Pope can authoritatively teach and rule the whole Church. So if we don't have one, then we just have to accept that fact, deal with it, bear that cross. Maybe, and as I said, maybe we'll see a true Holy Father one day, but maybe not. But one thing is, here's another point to consider. God has allowed bad popes to be in the chair of Peter, but God will never let a non-Catholic pope be in the chair. Well, he's a non-Catholic, but it's not just a matter of being a bad pope. He's just not a pope at all. He's a non-Catholic pope, and therefore he's no pope at all. I think we have to make that distinction, because, you know, the conservatives in the Vatican II Church keep saying, we have a bad pope, we have a bad pope, we have a bad pope. And we have to say, no, you don't have one at all. It's not just a matter of being morally bad. It's a matter, does he have the faith? He doesn't have the faith. So God will not allow a non-Catholic pope to ever happen, because then the papacy would become a means of damnation. Since people would be following the Pope's teachings and rulings, and it would be leading them to hell. So this is why God cannot allow a non-Catholic Pope. Yes. Bergoglio was never even qualified to be a pope. It's like as we've mentioned before, you have to be a U.S. citizen to be elected president. If you were born in Canada, or you were born in France or Kenya, I like throwing that in there every so often. Kenya, then you're not eligible. It's an invalid election. It's an invalid appointment. So we have to remember, Bergoglio never had the papacy. Oh, he's been wearing a white cassock, but anybody can put on a white cassock and get away with it. Yes. So he's been wearing a white cassock. He's in that position of power, but that doesn't make him the Pope. He's there illegally. He doesn't have the Catholic faith. He, as Father Cicada said, he didn't start spouting heresies once he put on the white cassock. He was doing this for many years. So he's not just a bad. In other words, we don't even have to make that decision or make that analysis. I think he's a bad man, no doubt about it. But we don't even have to go talk about that. We can just he's a non-Catholic. Yes. Yeah. Because the other heretics elected him. So you have to remember, the most of the cardinals are as bad as he is. So of course they would elect somebody like them. Okay, yes. Yes. 12 apostles, Pope Pius XII, 12. Yes, 12 is obviously a very special number to God. 12 apostles, 40 is a special number. We're about to embark on the 40 days of Lent. Were all the Piuses good popes? As far as I know, they are. Three of them are canonized saints. Pope Pius the First, Pope St. Pius the First, Pope St. Pius the Fifth, and Pope St. Pius the Tenth. Yeah, but there's never been an accusation of or evidence of heresy from any of them. So they were all valid popes. Okay, let's go through the honor we pay to the Pope. We're going to look at titles today. And also on page 2, the insignia and marks of honor. All right, titles. Now, this is a most amazing list. I mean, there's no human title that can match the solemnity of these titles that every true pope carries. He is the Bishop of Rome. He is the vicar of Jesus Christ. He is the successor of the Prince of the Apostles. He is supreme pontiff of the universal church. He is patriarch of the West, primate of Italy, archbishop and metropolitan of the Roman province, sovereign of the Vatican City State, servant of the servants of God. Every one of those titles applies to the Pope. I'm going to pause this just for a second.
Sister, thank you. Tim, can you help me to... Okay. That's good. Thank you. Okay.
So just looking at these titles here, Bishop of Rome, why would we give that title to the Pope? Pardon me? Yes, because St. Peter St. Peter was the first bishop of Rome, and we also, theologians say that that it was by the will of Christ that that be the headquarters of the Catholic Church till the end of time. So we'll never be any other designation. We know that February 22nd was St. Peter's chair at Antioch. Okay, and then every January 18th, St. Peter's chair at Rome. So before St. Peter arrived in Rome, he did rule the church from Antioch. So good thing he didn't die there. Otherwise, we'd be the Antiochian Catholic Church. Really? So that was a temporary place. And Antioch was a very important city at the time. It's directly north of Jerusalem. You would have to go through Damascus, I believe. By the way, Damascus is the oldest inhabited city in existence. It has been continuously inhabited for 4,000 years. Damascus. But you go further than that, and you would go to Antioch. So I can see why St. Peter, either he was inspired or he just made the decision, I'm going to rule the church from here. But he knew that God wanted him, I believe God wanted him to go to Rome, right at the heart of the pagan empire, and that's going to be the headquarters till the end of time. That's a good question. How many years? And I'm sorry, I don't know the answer. St. Peter is the longest reigning pope. Nobody has reigned longer than he. When did he start reigning? You would all know this. What year did he start reigning as pope? 33 AD. So after the resurrection and before Jesus ascended into heaven on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, that's where Jesus said, "Do you love me? Feed my lambs. Do you love me? Feed my lambs. Do you love me? Feed my sheep." And three times, it had to be three times because St. Peter denied him three times in the Passion. But so from that moment on, he was the reigning pope. Jesus was still on earth, but how was it, just like 2 weeks, 3 weeks before he ascended into heaven? Maybe 5 days? I'm not sure. But anyway, definitely in 33 AD, and I believe, I'm not sure, I think it was 67 AD that St. Peter was martyred. So we're looking at 34 years. That's a very long time. Nobody, you know, why would this record be almost impossible to break? Because usually somebody's elected who's up in years, had many years of experience. So he's not going to be able to add on 34 years. Many popes, a number of them died the year that they were elected. And remember, medicine wasn't anything like it is today. So could be a very short reign. Yes. Yes, martyrs too. Many of them martyred in the first 300 years. Well, I don't count him as a true pope, but he was from 1978 to 2005. So if we do the math there, see, that's 27. How old was he? He was older than St. John, and St. John was considered to be, I believe, St. John was younger than our Lord. So St. John was considered to have died around the year 100 AD at the age of 100. So I think he may have been close to our Lord's age. So St. Peter may have been, maybe I would tack on maybe 10 to 20 years onto this. So St. Peter was either in his 70s or 80s, I think, when he was when he suffered his martyrdom. And he was put to death on the Vatican Hill.
Upside down.
Upside down, yes. He didn't feel worthy to hang right side up. But isn't that interesting? It's not one of the original seven hills of Rome. Vatican Hill was outside the city. But remember, so was Calvary. Jesus was put to death outside the city. His first vicar was put to death outside the city. I walk that distance, not exactly every foot, but I would say, I can see where they mark the place where it started. You can do the Stations of the Cross right there, in the streets of Jerusalem. I'm thinking somewhere between 3/4 of a mile and a mile. But that's just a quick estimate. Like, I'll try to look that up. You can literally look at, get an accurate measurement, because the Stations of the Cross is done every Friday by many people that go to Jerusalem. Yes. Well, Golgotha is right inside. You can't see it as a mountain. It's part of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So inside this huge church that's like 17 centuries old. It's, of course, it's been added on to. It's not, the whole church isn't 17 centuries long. It's at different levels because Jerusalem, all these old cities, they got built up over time. So you go to a very low place, and that's where the cross was found by St. Helena. But Mount Calvary is supposed to be in there. Mount Calvary is 15 to 20 feet taller than the level where... No, it's not like a huge hill, but it's obviously a hill. You go down the steps. You go up steps. You don't even know you're going up onto a little hill. It's because it's all within the church. But that's where Mount Calvary is considered to be. Let's go back to these titles. So Bishop of Rome, because he's the successor of St. Peter, Vicar of Jesus Christ, that must be like the greatest title of all, because he's literally taking our Lord's place. And so when this honor is paid to the Pope, we have to remember it's not paid to him as a man. It's paid to him as Jesus Christ. Same thing with ambassadors. When an ambassador is received by a foreign government, the honor paid to that ambassador is though the president or the king of the country were there, because they're using that authority at that time. They're the face of the president or the face of the king or the queen representing them. This is even true of the angels. In the Old Testament, why didn't God directly appear to Our Lady? He sent an ambassador. So God has done this repeatedly in the Old Testament and even the New, where an angel is sent and you honor that angel. You don't adore the angel personally, but you give that angel that attention and honor as though God was appearing to you, because they're carrying this ambassadorship at that moment. So Vicar of Jesus Christ, successor of the Prince of the Apostles, we talked about that already, Bishop of Rome, Supreme Pontiff. Let me tell you the Latin word. Pontifex comes from the Latin, and it means bridge builder. So pons, you see, we get the word pontoon from this. You know what a pontoon is? It's a temporary sort of bridge. So one who makes a bridge, so bridge builder, if you're going to get across from one side to another, you have to go on the bridge. So interestingly, even in the pagan Romans called their high priest pontifex. Julius Caesar was pontifex maximus. It was supposed to be a religious function, but so often it was like anything else, just like a political thing to do. Oh, I'm the pontifex maximus. But in the Catholic sense, that's what a bishop is. He is he's like a bridge between God and us. So only one pope can have the title of not just pontiff but supreme pontiff. So a bishop is a pontifex, but he's not a supreme pontifex, okay? Or supreme pontiff. So pontifex, and then in the English it's pontiff. You know, we don't keep exact spellings. Okay, so no, the pope is, but I'm talking about any other bishop. Any bishop can be called a pontiff. Okay. Yes. Oh, yes, bridge building, yes. Build bridges, not, that's what the liberals say, build bridges, not walls. The conservatives say, build walls, not bridges. But this is the good meaning of bridge building, you know. So it's been around, this term has been around a long time, and the church has even incorporated to refer to the bishops, and it's a role they have to play. I hadn't heard that. Maybe there is that connection, like a bridge from the Old Testament to the New, but definitely the Old Testament all leads to the New, no doubt about it. Okay, Patriarch of the West. You know, there are some very high-ranking cardinals in the East. I'm trying to think of these cities that have such a high dignity, thinking, well, Jerusalem for one. There's actually a Patriarch of Jerusalem. There's a Patriarch of Alexandria. There's a Patriarch of Constantinople. Now, many of these ended up being schismatics, but there's also truly patriarchs in the East. I'm trying to think. There used to be more of them, like the Patriarch of Ephesus, the Patriarch of Chalcedon, the Patriarch of Antioch. I think that's now. So there are Catholic patriarchs in the East, but they're not. They're not popes. Some of them might be called a kind of pope, but they know that they're subject to the pope in Rome. But these are what we call Eastern patriarchs. But there is one patriarch in the West, and that's always the pope. Okay. All right. So let's keep going. Primate of Italy. That means, Italy is always going to be a very important country for the Catholic Church because Rome is in Italy. And it's just a special designation that the Pope has. He's the number one bishop of Italy. That's what Primate of Italy means. There are primates These are like the dioceses that are considered the top diocese in a country. I'll test your knowledge here. What city is the primate city in Ireland? It's not Dublin. Good guess, though. I'll give you a hint. It's where St. Patrick is supposed to have been buried. What's the primatial diocese or city in Ireland? Have you ever heard of Armagh?
Oh, yes.
That's considered the number one diocese in Ireland. Historically, it's the has the greatest honor. So that's what primate means. It's not, we're not talking about patriarchs, we're talking about primates. It's a term that's used. What is the primatial church in France? I think it's Paris, because that was the first diocese to be established in France. What about I'm not sure if primatial church in Portugal? Lisbon. Okay, coming closer to home, what's the primatial church, the original diocese of the United States? Baltimore. It has that honor of being the number one diocese. It's just an honor. It's just an honor. It used to be, I think, where there used to be even more power, where there was more power for the primate, but now it's just simply an honor. Because each bishop of a diocese answers directly to Rome. So you don't need, things got more centralized as the centuries went on. You know, it used to be more decentralized. There was always the understanding that the head of the church is in Rome, but bishops, patriarchs, and primates could do more in centuries gone by. But as time went on, things got more centralized. And it's a good thing, because communication improved. All of the world got discovered and explored and mapped. So it just made sense to have things more centralized as time went on. He's the primate of Italy, because Rome is the number one diocese of Italy. Archbishop and metropolitan of the Roman province. So again, it kind of ties in with the idea of being the number one archdiocese in all of Italy. Sovereign of the Vatican City State. This means that he is the civil ruler of the Vatican City. There's nobody else like him in the world who is both a religious ruler and a civil ruler. He rules completely in both realms. Of course, in some Muslim countries, they may have come close to that. I was thinking of the Ayatollah Khomeini. Remember him in Iran? He may have come close to ruling everybody religiously and civilly. And of course, I'm just saying that as a matter of historical fact. But for a true pope, he is supposed to rule his own country, so he's not subject to some other government. And finally, servant of the servants of God. So let's take a quick look at some of these titles. Pope. The most noteworthy of the titles are Papa, Sumus Pontifex, Pontifex Maximus, Servus Servorum Dei. The title Pope was, as has been stated at one time, employed with far more latitude. In the East, it has always been used to designate simple priests. In the Western Church, however, it seems from the beginning to have been restricted to bishops. So bishops were called Papa or Pope. Okay. It was apparently in the 4th century that it began to become a distinctive title of the Roman pontiff. Pope Siricius seems so to use it. Yet as late as the 7th century, St. Gal addresses Desiderius of Cahors as Papa. So I guess historically it was used for bishops, But then eventually it came to mean only one person, and that is the Roman pontiff. Yes. Padre, padre is just is Spanish for father. I mean, papa is father. So, okay, so Gregory the VII finally prescribed that it should be confined to the successors of St. Peter. So for the last 1,000 years, the only one who can be called a pope is who? The Roman pontiff. The last 1,000 years. So if anybody else calls himself papa, can't do it. Not supposed to do it. Forbidden. And he is the spiritual father of the whole church. Okay, pontiff. We already talked about this already. What pontifex meant in the Latin, bridge builder. The terms pontifex maximus, summus pontifex were doubtless originally employed with reference to the Jewish high priest, whose place the Christian bishops were regarding as holding each in his own diocese. But as I said, even the Romans used this. Julius Caesar had carried the title of the Pontifex Maximus as part of his political career. Yeah, so there seems to be a connection, according to the Catholic Encyclopedia, to the Hebrews, but also the Romans. So, and what does it mean, pontifex? A connection, you know, between two shores connects us to God. As regards the title pontifex maximus, especially in its application to the pope, there was further a reminiscence of the dignity attached to that title in pagan Rome. We already talked about that. Tertullian, as has already been said, uses the phrase of Pope Callistus. Okay, so this is just looking at it historically, okay? Let's look at the last sentence there. After the 11th century, it appears to be only used of the popes, okay? So basically the same thing with papa or pope. The last 1,000 years, only one person can have that title. And in the last 1,000 years, only one person can be the supreme pontiff. It only makes sense. Okay, servant of the servants of God. This phrase, serva servorum Dei, is now so entirely a papal title that, now this is one of the solemn forms a pope teaches. It's called a papal bull, and it comes from the Latin word bulla, and something to do with the metal seal that's used to make an impression in the wax on the pope's document. This is a very solemn form of papal teaching or decree. For example, Quo Primum of 1570. Okay, so what the point here is, the pope has to sign it that way because that's just been the tradition. If he doesn't sign it that way, then you could say that's a spurious document. It's not for real. So this is one of the very important titles of the pope, to be truly the servant of the servants of God. Now, early on, other people used it. St. Augustine used it to talk about himself. He says, I am the servant of Christ, and through him I am the servant of the servants who serve him. That's how you translate the Latin there. Okay. But look at the last sentence. The restriction of the term to the pope alone began in the 9th century. Okay, so this is how long these titles have been around. So pope, supreme pontiff, and then servant of the servants of God. Okay, so this one has been, since actually the 11th century, this one has been applied only to the pope since the 11th century, and servant of the servants of God has been applied only to the Pope since the 9th century. Would you say these have been around for a long time? Definitely more than our American Republic has been around, like three or four times as long. So very, very significant titles. Nobody else is allowed to use them. Okay, let's look at the insignia and marks of honor shown to a pope, the tiara. The pope is distinguished by the use of the tiara or triple crown. This is, now, you say tiara, sometimes women use it in fancy, as a fancy headdress. It's basically a, you know, one level thing, but the pope's tiara is always three crowns. It's unfortunate the triple crown means something in sports. You know, in our country, the triple crown in baseball or horse racing, obviously. As a matter of fact, when I was doing spell check on this, for this, it came up capitalized because, you know, Microsoft Office only knows the sports designation of the triple crown. But this is the triple crown of the Pope. And what do those three crowns represent? We've covered this before. It means king, prophet, and priest. So it means the supreme power he has as prophet, as king, and as priest. Those are the three supreme powers the Pope has. Prophet, in other words, the one who teaches, king, the one who rules, and priest, the one who sanctifies. But there's another meaning of the it's aligned to that, but it's also the power of teaching, ruling, and sanctifying. It could be the powers themselves, but at any rate, that is what the three signifies. And it's a most magnificent thing. You could see the three crowns clearly there. Now, you know, what Paul VI was the last one to use it, and the one that he had that was given to him by the people of Milan, it looks like a spaceship. And I'm saying this, it's sad. I mean, it looks like a rocket, and it's got three very thin, metal bands around it, and it doesn't convey a sense of dignity. It's like, what, you know, why does this look like a spaceship? You know, that's a good question. I think that all of the previous tiaras, they were buried with the Pope or put into a museum or, you know, to be honest with you, I can't think right now of ever having seen a tiara in any museum. I've been to Europe a few times, but I just can't think of any place I've seen. This was Pope so-and-so's tiara. I do know that Paul VI sold his and gave the money to the United Nations. The godless United Nations. It's in New York City somewhere. It's on display. But if you Google it, you could Paul VI tiara, you'll see what I mean. It's very modernistic looking. And of course, that's what he was. He was a terrible modernist that, you know, promulgated all the documents of Vatican II, destroyed practically all the sacraments through the change in the rites of the sacraments, and caused the most incredible damage. I'm not 100% sure. I'll have to look that up, you know, and to see where these tiaras are. I do know that when a pope dies, his fisherman's ring is taken off, and the Camerlengo, either personally or supervised as being done, sees it smashed with a hammer. That's what's supposed to happen to the Pope's ring. Why? Because the ring is the impress the wax, you know, on official documents with it, and this could be abused. So it's literally destroyed, each one. You don't see papal rings on display for sure. Oh no, they with John Paul I, he said there will be no more coronations of popes. There'll be an installation or an inauguration. Yeah. Yes. Investiture, maybe that's what they call it. I'm not 100% sure of the title, but under true popes, it was literally called the coronation of the Pope. Now remember, he became Pope at the moment he accepted the election. But actually the same thing is true of kings and queens. For example, Queen Elizabeth II of England. The moment her father died, she automatically became the next monarch of England. That's why we have that saying, the king is dead, long live the king, the next one, who automatically, the heir. So when Queen Elizabeth II dies, who automatically becomes king? Prince Charles. But there's still going to be there'll still be a coronation ceremony a couple of weeks later. As a matter of fact, in Queen Elizabeth's case, I think it may have been upwards of a year later, she was traveling in Kenya with her husband, Prince Philip, when she got word her father had died. So she knew that she had, from that moment on, she was the Queen of England. Yeah. Well, she knew her father was in poor health. He was he had suffering from cancer, and he heavy smoker. He was only about 54 years old. He's quite young. And she's 93. Seems to be going strong, you know. And the church acknowledges her as the sovereign as the civil ruler in this constitutional monarchy of England, but the church will never say she's the head of the Church of England, because that's a false religion. But when her grandfather or great grandfather was crowned King of England, Pope St. Pius X sent a delegation not to participate in any Anglican worship, but just to acknowledge the fact that he was a civil ruler. Okay. All right, so that's the tiara. At what date the custom of crowning the Pope was introduced is unknown. In other words, it's not absolutely essential. I doubt St. Peter was crowned. You know, they just didn't do it, especially during the ages of persecution. But it's very fitting that the one who holds supreme power on earth in the spiritual realm should be crowned as such. Off topic a little bit here, I remember reading a comment that says when Queen Elizabeth II dies and Charles becomes king, he seems to have no interest in religion, you know, in the Anglican Church anyway, which is such a farce, because the king, the monarch of England, is supposed to be the supreme ruler of the church. Remember Henry VIII, I'm the head of the church in England, and I give myself this divorce, which the Pope won't give me, or whatever, you know. But it goes to show that it doesn't work, and it's going to collapse. I mean, it's a dying religion. Those beautiful churches they have in England that were Catholic, so many of them, Westminster Abbey, Cathedral of Ely, Cathedral of Salisbury, Cathedral of, you know, all these beautiful churches that were Catholic. I mean, they can't bring people into church anymore. England is becoming an atheist country. Well, actually, and then it's now the Muslims are becoming stronger and stronger. Yes, they have a Muslim mayor who was born in Pakistan. So interestingly, I don't expect him to do much in the area of religion, because it's just, as I said, it's a dying religion. They have the churches, but they certainly don't have the true faith. Okay, so we don't know when the tiara began to be used, but it's very fitting. Okay, the cross, number two. The Pope, moreover, does not, like ordinary bishops, use the bent pastoral staff, but only the erect cross. This custom was introduced before the reign of Pope Innocent III. So this has been around almost a millennium. The Pope uses a staff that has the, you know, cross. You've seen Bishop Pivirunis's staff. Every bishop has the curved. Yes, it's a shepherd's staff. But you know, this is you've seen, no doubt, that crucifix that Paul VI, John Paul II, yeah, it looks horrible. It's modern art, and it's disrespecting Christ on the cross. And then Bergoglio, he's even used things that look like witches, something a witch would use. Have you seen pictures of that? So close to it. It's horrible looking. I mean, so it's just a total insult to our Lord. As a matter of fact, Father Chicada says he calls it the twisted lizard. He said it's horrid. It's such a disrespectful thing to our Lord to have a twisted, grotesque corpse of our Lord on this, supposedly of our Lord on the cross. Only a modernist would think of doing something that evil. Don't you agree? Only a modernist would have a twisted figure of Christ on the cross. Well, I believe it started with Paul VI. He uses this, as a matter of fact, it even curved down, the idea of the broken cross, which is an antichrist symbol or satanic symbol, the broken cross. I tell people, don't use the peace sign. I don't even want to draw it, but you know what I mean? The vertical and then the two legs going down. It's a hippie sign of peace. Nothing Catholic about it. Don't use it to anybody. That's what I would tell them. But only a modernist like Paul VI would find it acceptable to find a broken cross. And then definitely John Paul II, even Benedict XVI, and Francis is the worst of all. They have a grotesque, twisted image of Christ on there that does not honor our Lord. I'd almost say, that's enough to show me he can't be the true Pope, that if he's going to dishonor the one he's supposed to be vicar of. Okay, the pallium. Okay, we've got about 1 minute left here. The pallium is, I'll just have to show you here, it's basically it's something that only archbishops wear, not a normal bishop, an archbishop. It's a thin white strip of wool, and it hangs down like this. It goes over his shoulders, and it hangs down in the back. And then there's also one piece that goes down this way, one piece that goes down that way. That's called a pallium. Only archbishops are allowed to wear it. It's white with red crosses on it. Pallium. I think Francis uses it. Google old pictures of, you know, Pope Pius XII, and you'll see him in liturgical ceremonies wearing a pallium. And Then finally, even the idea of kissing the Pope's foot, the characteristic act of reverence by which all the faithful do honor him as the vicar of Christ, is found as early as the 8th century. Even Emperor Justinian II paid him that respect. Now, I think that the church doesn't do that as a... for example, people that had audiences with Pope Pius XII, they did not do that. But historically, it was done. And again, because you would do it to our Lord, so you do it to his vicar. So I know we kind of quickly conclude this. But later on this month, what I would like to do is to look at the coronation ceremony of a true pope, look at the oath that a pope takes on his coronation day. What would a visit to a true pope be like in Rome? I don't think any of you have had that privilege. When Pope Pius XII was still alive, but what would that be like? What was the dress? What was the etiquette expected? What were you supposed to wear? Interestingly, everybody had to wear black. The only exceptions were queens and wives of presidents. They were allowed to wear white, but everybody else had to wear black and a very modest dress. So we'll look at some of these things. It's all part of giving honor to the vicar of Christ.